First on our agenda, we have Senate File 3364. Welcome, Senator Hoffman. Please go into your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here to present Senate File 3364, and I want to say this bill, my good friend David Tomasoni, Senator David Tomasoni, was a great public servant, longtime member of this body, and a former chair of this committee, Mr. Chair, along with Rarick, and Senator Rarick, I should be formal, but he was the president of the Senate, and he's the only hockey player I know in the history of the world that actually took out the great one, and I have the picture to prove it. But David really was a dear friend to all of us, a lot of us, me especially. When he shared his ALS diagnosis in June of 2021, and then in March of 2022, he introduced the original legislation and passionately advocated for the passage to establish and fund both the David J. Tomasoni ALS Research Grant at $20 million and then the Senator David Tomasoni Caregiver Support Grant Program at $5 million. Members will remember this bill passed with broad bipartisan support in both bodies. We would not be here today without Senator Tomasoni leading this charge. And Mr. Chair and members, these grant programs are essential in supporting those living with ALS and their families. The research grant provides competitive grants to scientists studying the prevention, treatment, cause, and cures of ALS. The first round of grants was awarded to five grantees totaling $4 million to fund ALS research in Minnesota. And that's the other thing Tomasoni was always about, was Minnesota made, Mr. Chair. And so these are folks that are working on a cure for the disease, and because of David Tomasoni research grant, there are folks that are gonna go and find a cure. And so I believe we need to continue to invest in this research and innovation. And this bill, Mr. Chair, in your committee, because research dollars go through the Office of Higher Ed. And that's why this bill, this part of the bill is in here, and that's why the jurisdiction really sits here, not in the committee I chair. But Mr. Chair, let me just say that the caregiver support grants provide the financial support to help cover the costs and some of the costs associated with the in-home care, as well as the education for personnel and professional caregivers in Minnesota. Our family caregivers are essential in providing care to our loved ones, and without them, the workforce crisis that we are seeing would be even worse. They're burning out and they need our help and support. This bill provides an additional appropriation for both the research grant and the caregiver grant. And I have Sarah Sanchez, who's from the ALS Association, who's here, and she can talk about how those funds are being used and what we're seeking, which I appreciate you hearing this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Ms. Sanchez, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sarah Sanchez, for the record, and I am Managing Director of Advocacy at the ALS Association. I'm speaking today on behalf of SF 3364. At any given time, more than 600 Minnesotans are living with ALS, two people diagnosed each week and another two passing. And it's fatal, it's progressive, a neurodegenerative disease with no known cure. It robs a person's ability to walk, to eat, and then eventually breathe. ALS, over the past few decades, we've had more breakthroughs in treatments, but it really, the cure remains elusive. Those living with ALS urgently need more effective treatments than what is available today. The David J. Tomasoni ALS Research Grant Program, named after the late Minnesota senator, does provide those translational research for people that lead prevention, functional improvement, and curative efforts with patients living with ALS. To date, as Senator Hoffman has mentioned, we have awarded $4 million to five different grantees. They are researching in the areas of brain and cervical cord imaging, as well as biomarkers, identification of protective factors, and biorepository for ALS research in Minnesota so we can understand the disease. People living with ALS and their families deserve the hope, and by continuing this investment in ALS research, we can improve the quality of life and help them live longer, prevent, delay, and then eventually a cure to this disease. And investing in research really does stimulate the drug discovery in clinical trial access and efficacy. It's more than just the cure. Investment in holistic research and treatment is really what's going to move the needle for Minnesotans with this disease. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Sanchez. We'll move on to right now questions or comments from members. Are there any questions from our members? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually don't have a question. I just want to make a few comments, if you'll permit me. I have the honor of representing the district that Senator Tomasoni, most of the area that he last represented. And this is an important piece of legislation for me personally and for my district. I remember when the bill was originally passed, Senator Tomasoni said, I know that this isn't going to save me, but I hope that it will save people years down the road. And this is just one more step in that direction to try and find a cure for this disease that is just heartbreaking. And so I wholeheartedly support this bill.
Thank you so much, Senator Farnsworth.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
There's room on this bill there, Senator Farnsworth. So, you know, Tomasoni like to see bills get full of names. So there's three spots left on this. I've been kind of, you know, so.
Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just texted my LA to before I made my comments to get me added to the bill.
Okay. Good job.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth. Any other members have comments? Seeing none, before we move on, Senator Hoffman, would you have any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I know that there was, we're still waiting on the, I talked to Sam, we're still waiting on, you know, budget proposals and stuff. I mean, there might be some slight cost because we're extending from 26 to 29 just to keep this thing going so that we can keep doing what we're doing. It's a real simple fix. It's just going to cost a little bit, and whether, you know, I do know that there are folks that really want to see this happen, and I think it's the route of this, that the disposition is to pass it to the floor, but that would mean go to finance, of course, and then they'll have to figure out that, I don't even know what that extra, extending it 2 years or 3 years, what that means, Mr. Chair, but I appreciate it. Passed out of our committee unanimously, and now we just let you know that. So I appreciate your time on this, and David was a great friend.
Thank you so much, Senator Hoffman. I was there when the bill passed unanimously, so now the bill is unanimously laid over. Thank you.
So it's not going to the floor. We're going to just lay it over.
Yeah, yeah.
Until, so you're keeping it here?
Yeah, and then we'll talk afterwards.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Duckworth, we'll move on with Senate File 1275. Senator Putnam went to go testify on one of his bills in another committee, so we're moving on to Senator Duckworth's, and then we'll jump back to Senator Putnam's bill right after.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I heard was Senator Putnam owes me a beer.
Thank you, Ranking Member Duckworth. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And before I begin, I do have an author's amendment. I'd love to move the A4, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Would you like to go into what the A4 amendment is?
Sure. I would be happy to, Mr. Chair. The A4, it is a delete also. Just reorganizes the bill, so if we could hopefully adopt it, then I'll be happy to speak to the bill in general.
Awesome. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it, and I apologize if I'm a little rusty in my bill presentation, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. The bill you have before you is commonly referred to as the Universal FAFSA bill. And just to be short and sweet about it, it takes a look at the FAFSA that students would complete in high school, and it does make it formally a graduation requirement. That being said, if you look at the bill, there are various ways in which students or families could either opt out of having to complete it should they not be able to, or find other creative solutions to make sure it truly does not prevent them from graduating. So for those that are immediately suspicious of an additional requirement to graduate, I want to put you at ease and let you know the way this bill is designed. Should a student find themselves between graduating or not, and this was the only thing they had yet to complete, this would not hold them up or prevent that student from graduating in and of itself. I think it's important for folks to understand that. This bill was crafted in a way to essentially encourage as many students as possible and their families to complete the FAFSA. And then ultimately, if they're not able to, schools, school districts, principals, staff, counselors would have the ability to essentially waive that requirement, or a student would be able to opt out of it. And here's why we're even having the conversation in the first place. This legislation, or legislation similar to it, has been adopted in both red states and blue states and purple states. And the results of this law being adopted and applied to those states have really led to three, I think, very significant things. First and foremost, it's led to increased graduation rates. It's led to increased enrollment in post-secondary education, and it's led to an increase in the amount of funding utilized by students as they pursue higher education. As a former school board member, I can tell you this. If there was one thing that we could have, as a school district, had and waved a wand and made happen that made graduation rates go up, that had more of our kids in college, and that allowed them to be able to afford it, I would have pursued it in a heartbeat. We have the chance to do that here right now in the state of Minnesota and to have that conversation. So I'm grateful to be presenting the bill. I know we have a lot of testifiers, so I'll just leave you with a few key pieces of information, and then I'm sure many of them will touch on it as well. It's important that folks need to know that nationally, Minnesota ranked 39th in FAFSA completions for graduating high school seniors in the year 21 to 22. We generally like to rank pretty high when we look at our state. So being 39th, it shows that we have some room for improvement there. This one's a little bit more dated, but in 2018, an estimated $30 million in Pell Grants went unused by eligible graduating Minnesota high school seniors. And last but not least, in 21 to 22, the FAFSA renewals for Pell-eligible students were down 6.4%, which was the 10th largest decline. So some of those things are moving in the wrong direction, or areas in which we can improve. I think this bill, this legislation, and the conversation about how we get more students and families to complete this will allow us to have a positive impact and get those numbers moving in the right direction. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd love a chance for testifiers to come forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Our first testifier is Adam Thompson from Students United. Welcome, Adam. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Adam Thompson, and I'm the Student Advocacy Coordinator for Students United. If you're not aware, I'm sure you are, Students United is a statewide student association representing students from Minn State's seven four-year universities. We are grateful for Senator Duckworth's leadership in bringing forward Senate File 1275, with millions of dollars of federal aid left unused by Minnesota students, we know that the status quo cannot continue. Senator Duckworth's SF 1275 is the only proposal introduced in this session that will move Minnesota forward and empower students with information about what financial aid is available to them. In 2020, the Minnesota Legislature enacted legislation directing the Office of Higher Education and the Minnesota Department of Education to set an annual goal for FAFSA filing among high school seniors. The OHE has set a goal of increasing FAFSA filing by 5 percentage points every year for 5 years, with a focus on closing gaps in FAFSA filing for Black, Indigenous, and other students of color. Yet these gaps still persist. Minnesota remains in the bottom tier of state FAFSA completion rates, and we are not on track to hit our target, which is why this graduation requirement is necessary and necessary now. In recent years, states as different as California, Alabama, Maryland, and Texas have all made completing the FAFSA a high school graduation requirement. By doing so, they have seen increases in FAFSA completion and, most importantly, post-secondary enrollment rates. These states have also implemented policies that are in this legislation of no excuse waivers that have not proven to be a significant hurdle to cause any student not to graduate. And many of these states have been able to enact universal FAFSA policies without any fiscal impact on the state's budgets. Had Senator Duckworth's Senate File 1275 been law while I was a high school senior at Apple Valley High School, me and my family would have been saved a lot of struggles. I was a first-generation student. My parents generously, I hope they're not watching, knew very little about the FAFSA, and it was very hard to be able to get this done. I saw classmates who were offered services, pulled into counselors, things that I did not get the opportunity to access. And if this was here, we wouldn't have required someone to just do it for us, but we would have had a natural source of where to start, who to ask questions, where to find resources, and ultimately on how to get this done so I can easily get to college. While I was getting it done, it proved a very significant hurdle that I don't think I got it done until 2 days before classes started, which made me nearly postpone my college career. The completed FAFSA is also critical to increasing a robust support system. Last spring, the legislature passed the North Star Promise, ensuring tuition is covered for students of families making $80,000 and under. And we need those students to be able to see that they have a path forward. However, without FAFSA or the state grant aid application, students cannot access this transformative support. I would like to thank Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. And I think next up will be some students from Winona State who I just want to highlight. It is their spring break, and they are spending it here to speak on something they care about. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Thompson, for your testimony. Next up, we have Peyton Bainbridge, a student from Winona State University. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peyton Bainbridge. I'm currently a student at Winona State University, where I'm pursuing a bachelor's in public health. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 1275 and share why I believe its passage is so important. I am proud to be a first-generation college student, but like many first-generation students, completing the FAFSA proved to be a significant hurdle. When I was a high school senior, I knew I wanted to go to college and followed the checklist that my school gave me to help me get there. The checklist had things on it like prepare and complete your ACT and apply for college. My school offered and dedicated school time with plenty of resources to support checking these items off. That support and resource was critical in getting me to Winona State. I soon graduated, only had a few items left to check on my checklist that were supposed to be quick and easy into getting me into school, such as finishing my high school transcript and getting that transferred, as well as completing my FAFSA. In July, I finally started it after graduating the May before, and quickly found it was something I wish I had started months earlier. As the first person in my family to go to college, my parents knew as much as I did, which led to much confusion, frustration, and no answers as to who to turn to for help. We then contacted Winona State's financial aid for help by email, but it took days to get replies back as they were also busy with other students. Eventually, my parents and I were able to complete it, which taught them the important lessons for helping my younger siblings and lessons I wish we had learned while completing my own. If FAFSA completion was a requirement for graduation, my family and I would have gotten started earlier and I'd been able to ask my counselors for help. We didn't need anyone to do it for us, but we needed to have a clear place to turn to and resources and support that would have made a world of a difference in filling it out. As a public health major, I also like to think about how FAFSA completion would be an important tool to tackle the shortages in healthcare as well as other industries. The students who complete the FAFSA and see college as an option for them means more students who get to go to school to become our nurses and doctors. Additionally, members of Congress are currently working to extend Pell Grants to short-term and credential programs. These are the programs that help important workers like nursing assistants, welders, electrical linemen, and truck drivers. So even students who don't think that a four-year university college is right for them, they still get to see the options that would be available by completing their FAFSA. I urge members to support this legislation that will push our students and the state of Minnesota forward. Again, I'd like to thank Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much, Peyton, for your testimony. Next up on our list is Tyler Peel, a student from Winona State University. Welcome, Tyler. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tyler Peel. I'm a graduate student at Winona State University, pursuing a double master's in sports management and multicultural education. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify here today in support of SF 1275. I, like many other testifiers today, am a first-generation college student. And as a high school senior, I had to figure out what needed to be done to get to college. I completed my college applications, got accepted, and then was faced with completing my FAFSA. My parents and I, who were new to encountering the FAFSA, had loads of questions, but I was lucky enough to go to a school that focused on guiding me through the higher education process. Early in my school year, my school started walking us through it. They offered us resources to all families and hosted a FAFSA night where we were able to go in, receive a presentation about what FAFSA is, as well as an overview of how it's done, and sit down with counselors who could answer any questions and or direct us to the appropriate resources. In a sense, this is like an admissions and financial aid office within our high school done by our counselors. The emphasis and support from my school made it possible for my family to get the FAFSA done for the first time and is something that all students deserve. FAFSA as a graduation requirement is not only important to Minnesota completing its completion goals, but is important to closing equity gaps for first-generation students and students of color. As a man of color who received a bachelor's degree in social justice, diversity, and equity with a double minor in coaching ethnic studies, I have an extensive research regarding areas of importance when it comes to closing equity gaps, both within society and education. We know that FAFSA completion rates for Black, Indigenous, and other students of color are far lower than other students, and we have to give them the resources that they deserve. It not only helps students of color get to college, but FAFSA completion gives students an opportunity to see the options available to them and helps them see an end goal and motivates them to complete high school. I have seen this effect with my own eyes. As a mentor for 24 young Black men at Winona Area Public High Schools, I have taken the time to talk to them about FAFSA and how important completion is, as well as how beneficial it can be. As a Pell Grant recipient myself, I'm aware of how much of a stress reliever it can be. I've had 4 students alone in just the past 2 weeks, which is 17% of my group, inform me that completion of FAFSA has allowed them to change their goal from just completing high school to getting a degree. Many students toward the back end of their senior year stop caring about completing assignments and just want to be done. The students I've worked with have told me that after completing their FAFSA and understanding that now college can be affordable, they have a plan and are more determined than ever to finish high school on a good note as well as prepare for college. From both my expert opinion and my experience with these students, I am confident in saying that FAFSA as a graduation requirement will not only increase FAFSA completion rate, but will also increase high school graduation rates and college admission rates for students of color. I urge members to support this legislation, not just to meet the goals we set, but to give Minnesota a more equitable future. Again, I'd like to thank Chair Fate, Ranking Member Duckworth, and the committee members for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much, Tyler, for sharing your testimony.
Thank you.
Great job. We're gonna move on to the last speaker and move that last speaker up more to the next slot. They have another commitment that they have to run to, so. Sydney Pyrus, Advocacy Co-Chair, Minnesota Counselors Association. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, thank you so much. My name is Sydney Pyrus. I am a school counselor as well as I sit on the Minnesota School Counselor Association Government Relations Committee. And we wanted to take a moment to kind of share some information from our lens as school counselors in review of the bill information and the wording in there. There is a lot of onus that goes onto the high schools, obviously, with it being a high school graduation requirement. And a lot of that onus does fall onto school counselors as well as administration with principals. And so I want to first start off by saying we understand the national, state, local requirements and programs that affect future opportunities for college and career readiness. We are specifically trained to do that. We know we play a critical role in academic as well as career planning for students. We take a proactive role in assisting students and families in terms of that. You've just heard from a variety of students that talked about the resources and support that they received both at high school as well as in college in order to address FAFSA completion, as well as the college application process and just navigating that and just how challenging it can be, whether you are a first generation student or whether your parents have been out of college and have all those things changed quite a bit from time to time. So you've heard a lot of already really great feedback in terms of the work that we do and others do to help support students in this process. That being said, we have a couple of concerns in terms of how it's currently written, and we also have some suggestions of maybe a slightly better or different approach that may get at some of the core of some of the concerns that you've heard today. The first piece is in terms of like our workload, right? It is, we talked earlier today with the Senate about our workload in terms of we're 48th in the nation. And some of what you've already heard today has been us already doing a lot of programming pieces, meeting with students, arranging colleges to come in and help support with FAFSA completion nights. And so there is already some of this work that is being done across the state and in many of the high schools in partnership with our colleges, and as well as our students and families and even nonprofit organizations to help support this work. However, putting a requirement for graduation as attached to FAFSA would increase that workload exponentially. And I wanted to share that concept because when this does actually get, you know, actually trickle down in the reality of the people that are on the ground doing this work, that is something that needs to be considered, is the type of work we're already doing. And then by adding this essentially onto our plates to ensure it's getting done and ensure that there is an opt-out for those that aren't, is an even heavier load on an already taxed system. I heard 35th in the nation in terms of FAFSA completion rate. Minnesota's ranked 48th in the nation for school counselor to student ratios. So we're already feeling that as well. Some other concerns that we have is in terms of privacy. We have lots of students and families that have a variety of concerns when it comes to sharing information like this. And by requiring it as a graduation component, even with an opt-out, there are going to be lots of concerns that may come from some students and families. I know on almost a daily basis, I am hearing those concerns from students and families themselves of being required or obligated to share this information in order to receive financial support. Some of those students, you know, obviously will qualify and some of them won't. And so by being obligated to provide that information, it's going to put some hard conversations, some uncomfortable conversations, and some requirements that families are engaging in when, you know, again, they have that choice to do that. Additionally, you've heard some folks talk about the equity piece in terms of some students that are typically able to receive Pell Grants and other forms of financial aid are oftentimes not searching these opportunities, not knowing how, not knowing, you know, the when, the why, all of that information. And what we've seen so far in terms of like research is there is more access to the Pell Grant, for example, but we're not seeing huge increases in terms of FAFSA completion. So one of the examples was Louisiana. They saw essentially after this completion rate, they saw anywhere from a 3 to 5% completion rate that happened after a requirement such as this. And that's been pretty similar in some of those other states. It's helped increase that rate. But what we haven't seen yet is whether that has lowered their cost of attendance or whether they're graduating from college with less debt, nor have we seen their ability to graduate college more on time. And so we wanted to bring that awareness because if the premise of a graduation requirement is to ensure certain groups of students that have been traditionally financially disadvantaged to ensure that they're completing this and getting access to the appropriate financial resources, it's not just about access to it. It encompasses way more than that. It encompasses their admission to the school. It encompasses the support they're getting at the college. It encompasses not just, you know, grants and loans, but scholarships. And there is a lot of information and advising and resources that go into that conversation. But from an equity piece, our view would be that there are other routes to go about doing this in a more educational way. In addition to that, it doesn't actually, by requiring it and looking through the bill language so far, there have been some recommendations on some resources and support that would be provided to schools. However, it doesn't actually address some of the root causes of why these inconsistencies and these gaps exist. It doesn't, you know, address the financial literacy piece. It doesn't address the long-term loan and cost of attendance. It doesn't address actually successfully completing college and completing it on time. Research shows that for every semester that students are taking past the, you know, typical time, like 4 years, for example, for a bachelor's degree, every semester after that is costing them anywhere from $6,000 to $12,000 per semester when they're switching majors or they're switching colleges and transferring. So there's a lot of root causes that that are impacting students in terms of completing the FAFSA, in terms of affording college, that a requirement to the graduation standards does not address. What we would rather see is some consistency within graduation requirements. For example, a lot of the learning standards that we have when it comes to graduation requirements are attached to courses and subjects, and that school districts are able to decide, you know, when that is taught, how, you know, loosely in terms of how it's taught and what's covered. And what we would rather see is, especially with the change last year and that the financial aid in the personal literacy course, personal finance is going to be a requirement moving forward. What we rather see and what we think makes more sense within current literature, within current practice, within current laws, is that FAFSA completion and education, and not just FAFSA. Again, affording college is way more than just FAFSA. We would rather see that type of information be embedded in the personal finance curriculum, and that students are being taught and advised all things related to affording college, whether that be the FAFSA, the DREAM Act, various scholarships, grants, 529 plans, loan forgiveness, apprenticeships, and there's, those are just some of them. There are a variety of other alternative college financing options for students, and our big role is to educate students. And it is our obligation, and I think our duty, to put this type of information and the nature, some of the nature of this bill, into that class and into those standards, so that students are being educated on those pieces before that they're graduating high school, and that they're having those resources in conjunction with some of the work that we're already doing in terms of hosting FAFSA nights, in terms of hosting scholarship nights, that a lot of the schools are already doing work like that. And I think a better solution that gets at more of those root causes and more of the actual education that we typically require for graduation requirements, it does a better job of doing that and addressing those pieces, is our viewpoint. So again, we value, we understand, we advocate, we support students and families in their pursuit of post-secondary education. We understand the concerns that folks have been raising today, but we think there's a better solution that gets at this versus what's been proposed today.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Sydney. Next up, we have Maddie Spartz, Policy and Research Analyst from Ed Allies. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Maddie Spartz. I'm the Policy and Research Analyst at Ed Allies. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1275, and thank you, Senator Duckworth, for your years of leadership on this much-needed policy. By adding FAFSA or a state financial aid form as a high school graduation requirement, we can empower students with more options, more information, and greater opportunity. As you've heard, this policy is urgently needed because just half of Minnesota high school seniors complete the FAFSA every year. And nationwide, we rank near the bottom in FAFSA completion. The last two graduating classes have left over $100 million of unused Pell grants on the table. In 2020, the Office of Higher Ed and the Department of Education set a goal of increasing FAFSA completion by 25% over 5 years, with a focus on closing gaps for students of color. In the 2.5 years since, these gaps are persisting, and we are not on track to meet our goal. Without action, we will continue to leave too many students behind. Data from other states that have enacted universal FAFSA demonstrate that this policy is effective in increasing the number of students who complete a financial aid application, particularly for students of color and low-income students. And critically, the data also show that these policies have not had an adverse effect on high school graduation rates. Senate File 1275 has the most generous opt-out provision of any universal policy we have seen nationwide. Furthermore, of the 13 states that have passed universal FAFSA, only one, New Hampshire, has a lower childhood poverty rate than Minnesota. So states serving higher percentages of economically disadvantaged students have made it a priority through policy to ensure those very students have access to resources that can change their economic trajectory. Beyond what the data says, I can say from personal experience how impactful this policy would be. I began my career as a College Possible coach at Burnsville High School, and I spent 3 years as a college navigator with College Readiness Academy, a program here in St. Paul that helps immigrant and refugee adults access higher education. I have filled out more FAFSAs than I can count, and I know how financial aid can make or break a student's path to college. From that experience, I can also say the federal government's recent streamlining of the FAFSA has been a long time coming, and what used to be a cumbersome and complicated form is being shortened by more than half. And while the rollout has been bumpy, those issues will be long fixed before any Minnesota student would be required to fill up the FAFSA for graduation. With the North Star Promise and direct admissions, Minnesota has rightfully made headlines as a true leader in college access for all. But without completing the FAFSA, students aren't able to access those transformational opportunities. Senate File 1275 is the key to ensuring that no student falls through the cracks. Thank you for considering this bill and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Maddie, for your testimony. Next up, we have Christy Snyder, Policy and System Transformation Officer with Youth Prize. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair, committee members, Senator Duckworth. I'm so excited to be here. This is such a great bill to testify on today. I work at Youth Prize. It's a state intermediary devoted to elevating youth voice and increasing equity for young people in Minnesota. I am so appreciative of all of the work this committee has done and all of you have done to make North Star Promise happen and to make sure that direct admissions, we have that three-legged stool right now, almost built. This bill would be the third leg of that stool. You would have a young person really be able to find out that they're going to be accepted to college. Maybe they didn't think of that before. We already have our Minnesota State System College and universities giving young people their admission policy or their admission without even applying. It's amazing what we're doing. And then the North Star Promise, those young people that make under $80,000, they will know that they can go. But without the FAFSA completion, they won't know because they won't apply. I think that this is a huge thing that we can do to make our goal of 70% of our people in the state of Minnesota to have a post-secondary credential. This is critical for our workforce. Another win that you all have done that you should feel great about is what you did to make sure that you covered the full cost of post-secondary for young people in foster care. That fostering independence grant for those young people who are in the child welfare system after the age of 13, that is huge. But unfortunately, that we're seeing that the four-year graduation rate of young people in foster care is only 37% right now from high school. Post-secondary is worse. Less than 5% graduate from a four-year college, and 2 to 6% complete a two-year degree. But your investment in the fostering independent grants is going to change all of that. But the barrier to receive the benefit is so low, they simply have to fill out the FAFSA. There's no other application. Behind the scenes, our civil servants are figuring out who's eligible, making sure that they get that information. But we, without the universal FAFSA, they don't know. They don't know to apply. They don't know that this is there for them. And they're missing out on a critical component. And the stakes are high. We know that up to 50% of young people who are experiencing homelessness in our system have experience in the child welfare system. So not only is this about making sure young people can step powerfully into post-secondary, it's also a prevention to make sure that young people don't experience homelessness. And so this is a huge way, this FIG, this universal FAFSA, is the ticket to FIG. And so we can't forget that Minnesotans have already invested so much. And I heard the testimony. There's so many reasons why you might not choose to move this forward. Yes, districts are stressed. Yes, Minnesota has the worst counseling student ratios in the nation. I get it. And yet, with the universal FAFSA, with the FAFSA easier than ever, as we just heard, despite that uneven rollout, districts can be creative, we can engage community members, we can shift their accountability measures from in the world's best workforce to align with this metric, so it's no additional work. Young people have no idea that post-secondary is attainable for this, and they need this universal FAFSA. I hope you support this. I'm so grateful for your leadership. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Ms. Snyder, for your testimony. Next up, we have Maxwell, Denzel Lagey, Lita Men. I apologize if I mispronounced your last name.
It's okay, Chair Fateh. A lot of people get it wrong.
Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Fateh and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Maxwell Danzelagi, and I am representative from Lita Men, College Students Connecting for Change. We are the statewide student association representing over 100,000 community and technical college students in the state of Minnesota. A few weeks ago, students from every corner of the state came together to decide what critical issues we should advocate for as community college students. And what we came to the conclusion was we chose universal FAFSA as our top priority because it is a crucial bridge to higher education for numerous students throughout the state. Unfortunately, a significant number of Minnesota students are unaware of the FAFSA or do not receive adequate support in completing the form. Minnesota has consistently ranked at the bottom for FAFSA completion rates, yet years of setting goals and hoping and praying that we will boost college attainment levels in Minnesota have left yet to result in the changes we need. State Statute 120B.125 already mandates schools to assist students in making a successful transition to post-secondary education. However, Minnesota has witnessed persistent stagnant enrollment rates for African American and Asian students. It is time for bold action, so Lita Men supports the universal FAFSA legislation. Thus far, 13 other states have implemented universal FAFSA, and the results have been very impressive. Starting off, from our research, we have found that students are 127% more likely to attend college immediately after high school, and we have found no indicators that universal FAFSA decreases high school graduation rates, and if a student cannot complete it on time for any reason, there is an opt-out option available in the legislation being passed right now. A study in Louisiana found that universal FAFSA led to a 1 to 2 point increase in college enrollment. These increases were even more significant in high schools with a larger percentage of free and reduced lunch students. This bipartisan legislation will help the next generation of Minnesotans prosper and succeed in higher education. We need a tide that can lift all boats. This is a cost-effective way to invest our future, as more Minnesotans from lower-income families will have a pathway to higher education and pave their way, their careers and dreams by more effectively using our existing resources that we already have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Maxwell, for your testimony. Mm-hmm. Finally, we have Karina Vieira, a student at the University of Minnesota. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Senator Fateh, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karina Vieira, and I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, and I'm here in support of Senate File 1275. I stand as a first-generation and non-traditional student who has navigated the maze of financial challenges. In my high school days, I was taught to think that college was a fantasy for me and my peers. Whenever we thought of the idea of college, it was like telling us we could win the lottery. I went to a high school with many people who came from low-income backgrounds and shared a classroom with a diverse pool of students. For us, college was regarded as something just for rich kids. When you look up the price of the college you wish to attend, the sticker price scares people away, particularly people that come from low-income backgrounds like myself. In 2021, nearly half of Minnesota high school graduates failed to complete the FAFSA application. That means that $48.9 million in unused aid could have gone to Minnesota students, which is an estimate according to NCAN, the National College Attainment Network. The knowledge gained from completing the FAFSA can help us make a more informed decision about going to college. The status quo is not working for students like myself because people at my high school determined that I was not college material. This legislation changes that mentality to one that we should ask every student to complete the FAFSA. We need to send a message to all students that they are college material, not just the ones that guidance counselors have the time to invest in. This legislation will ensure that no matter where they come from, who they are, or where they live, they will be able to see what the real cost of college may be for them. When I made my decision to go to college, I went to a community college because it was cheaper, but no one told me to fill out the FAFSA application until I heard another student talking about the application. I was highly surprised to see how much I was going to pay for college after filling out the FAFSA application. If my high school had implemented the FAFSA completion as a high school graduation requirement with the easy opt-out process, I have no doubt that I would have gone to college directly out of high school, and I would be a lawyer by now. Minnesota is missing out on thousands of students who would thrive and succeed in college if they would just complete the FAFSA application. I want to thank Senator Duckworth and this bipartisan effort. I hope that you all support Senate File 1275 so that students who come from marginalized communities have a chance to go to college. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And that concludes our testifiers. Are there any comments or questions from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Duckworth, would you like any closing comments?
Yeah, I'll be brief since I see Senator Putnam's not back yet. Maybe I'll stall a little bit longer for him, and by the end of this, maybe I'll get a second beer for helping him out. First and foremost, I appreciate everybody who testified. In particular, I think that last story serves as a pretty eye-opening example of the positive impact that a bill like this could have for students all across the state of Minnesota. I do think it's important to acknowledge, I appreciate the perspective that was shared by the woman who was representing school counselors across the state. There have been other organizations that have reached out and provided feedback or shared concerns regarding the requirement in the bill. I'm more than happy to have conversations and listen to feedback. We started off the bill presentation with a delete-all amendment to the bill. We got it down to a page. That's on purpose. We don't want to add to any burdens that high school staff or counselors are having to deal with right now. But we see this as so important and such a priority and so impactful that we believe, I believe, have found a way to put it into law that will be the easiest way in which districts can adopt it and help students complete the FAFSA in time prior to graduation. And again, there is an opt-out that families can choose. So I'll touch on a couple of other things since we have a little bit more time and to address some of the things that were shared during the testimony. As it relates to the financial literacy comment that was made, yeah, we passed that last year. I think it's great. There's nothing that would prevent a school district or a counselor from embedding something like this within the financial literacy component or curriculum that a school district adopts. That actually is a pretty good idea. One thing that I will say is the way the bill is crafted is it allows school districts in combination or in consultation with counselors and staff to figure out what's the best way to implement it. We don't mandate or exactly prescribe how they have to go about doing it. We simply say, hey, we'd like to see kids and families complete this. We've given you some generous parameters in terms of whether or not they actually have to do it. And it's up to you to determine the best way to implement it at your school building with your students. We're not going to exactly tell you how to. We just want to see an effort made that would lead to more completions. So I'll end by saying this. Imagine you're a kid out there, you're a student in a Minnesota high school, and you've never really heard about the FAFSA. Your family's never heard about it. You're getting closer and closer to graduation. You're trying to decide what you're going to do beyond high school, what you desire for your future, and nobody's ever talked to you seriously about college, or you've simply ruled it out because of all the things you've heard regarding how expensive it is, and you've never actually really thought it's an option for you to pursue. Now I want you to imagine that somebody at your high school says, hey, part of graduation requirements or part of what you have to do before we get you finished is you got to complete this. So the kid does. They sit down with their family, they get it done, and they realize that the financial options available to them are beyond what they ever thought possible. and all of a sudden, their mindset regarding their future, their college education changes dramatically, and they find themselves pursuing something that they otherwise would have never even thought existed for them as an option. That's why I think this bill is important, and I look forward to hopefully allowing us to have some positive conversations that increase graduation rates for students, see them enroll in college at a higher degree, and also help them end up save a little bit of money along the way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. You made some very good points. And to add to that, I saw online this afternoon that it was a tweet from the National College Attainment Network stating that there's a 42% drop in FAFSA completions through mid-February from this time last year, which is heartbreaking. It's a lot of opportunities lost, a lot of talent lost. And although I really appreciate some of the concerns shared by the Counselors Association, I think that is too great of an issue to not act on. So I appreciate your work on this and your continued work on this as well. So we'll be sending your bill to Education Policy. Senator Duckworth, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, please.
Senator Duckworth moves that Senate File 1275, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Education Policy Committee. Are there any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill as amended is recommended to pass, re-referred to the Committee on Education Policy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Members, we'll be taking a brief few minute recess while Senator Putnam wraps up his testimony in another committee. Senator Umar Verveen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just while we have this break, I was wondering if any of the representatives from OHE could just speak to a question I have about FAFSA with the new rollout.
Sure. Would anyone from OHE like to speak to the FAFSA rollout? Thank you, Senator Umar Verveen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering with the sort of delayed rollout, if you have any data on how that's like impacting the applications and the renewals for Minnesota students.
Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself for the record as well and respond. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Wendy Robinson. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Office of Higher Education. And I can speak, I think, pretty broadly to that question, although I'll can also pull more specific data for you if we need to. We are currently in a position where Minnesota, like every other state, is still in a holding pattern waiting for the next stage of the FAFSA process. Students have been able to complete the FAFSA for roughly about 2 months now, but no college financial aid office has received the FAFSA data from the federal government to be able to be making financial aid offers or to be doing those financial aid packages. The last data that I saw was nationally there's about 5 million FAFSAs that are complete and ready to or are in the queue to be sent to the financial aid offices for that information, but there's some things that still have to happen at the Department of Education side before that happens. We are looking at mid-March is sort of the quote for when those forms will start being released to the colleges for them to be able to package those aid notifications. Those forms will be released by student and not by school. And so what, you know, if student A has applied to five different schools, those five schools will get that student's FAFSA, but schools won't get all of their FAFSAs at one time. And that's important because the federal government has never had this many FAFSAs in the queue waiting to be sent to financial aid offices before. And so I think it is going to be a multi-week process once those start getting released for schools to really get their full the full allotment of FAFSA that they will need to process. Realistically, I think students will probably be looking at into April before they start getting those financial aid notifications or their award letters, which is a really important part of the process, obviously, for the selection process and for students and families to start thinking about how they're going to be able to afford their education. And this is a significant delay from previous years. I will say, I think we're hearing a lot of conversation. You know, the financial aid offices are there just as a you know, they're just as anxious as anybody else is to try to get these in and to get those FAFSAs complete because they know that students are waiting for them. And I think there is an awareness on the part of institutions that they're going to have some flexibility this spring around students being able to make their choice to correct errors if there are errors in their FAFSA to be able to understand what their opportunities are.
Thank you, Senator Morvin. Thank you, Dr. Robertson, for your response. Senator Putnam, you ready? Senator Putnam, we voted to take $1,000 out of your ag budget for every minute you were late.
Mr. Chair, because I know the entire committee is wondering how I did in the competitive bag-off upstairs, I will satisfy your curiosity and let you know I got last.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam. Senate File 4226, welcome, Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I have before you Senate File 4226. I know I said the last bill that I presented was going to be simple and pretty quick, and Senator Rarick made sure that I was done in 30 seconds. This one I'm going to try to be even more efficient with, because there is one word in this bill. It's just the word energy. We are expanding the workforce scholarship opportunities that we established last session to include jobs in energy. And we all might know that there is a tremendous need for workforce when it comes to solar and wind and any number of other energy activities and industries. And this is our opportunity to help build that workforce by including this particular specialty, one deeply needed throughout the state, in this particular scholarship program. A little bit longer than 30 seconds, Senator Rarick, I apologize.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam. I see you have one testifier, Gwen Stevens from the People's Energy Cooperative. Welcome, Ms. Stevens. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Gwen Stevens, and I'm the Director of Cooperative Relations at People's Energy Cooperative. We are located just north of Rochester in Orinoco, Minnesota. I'm here today to ask you to add energy as an eligible program of study for a workforce development scholarship. As I read each of the 9 eligible programs currently listed in statute, I couldn't help but think that electricity is required for all of them to function, as well as the rest of our economy and our lives. Our cooperative is like many electric utilities across the country that are experiencing the effects of baby boomers retiring and not enough qualified young people to fill the vacant spots. MREA cooperatives across the state report not getting enough qualified applicants as their biggest hiring challenge. It's next to impossible to hire experienced journey line workers or electrical engineers. I was recently talking with a national recruiter who told me it would be essentially easier to hire a unicorn than an electrical engineer with power system experience. With 25% of Minnesota's current cooperative workforce eligible to retire in the next 5 years, the workers we need to fill these jobs need to be in training now. In addition to these existing challenges, the increasing electrification of our economy is supercharging the growth of the electrical grid and intensifying the energy sector's workforce needs alongside it. Line workers and engineers are the most talked about jobs in our sector, but there are many other power technology professionals that are also important to ensure safe, reliable, and affordable electricity for our member owners. For example, at our cooperative, field engineers and substation technicians ensure our distribution system is built and operated effectively. Electricians, meter technicians, and distributed energy coordinators all support energy efficiency and distributed renewable energy generation programs. Beyond cooperatives, there are many other energy sector jobs that are growing as more renewable energy resources are being built and as technology advances create new opportunities in building EV charging stations, energy storage systems, and more. The significant decrease in qualified applicants at our organization has caused us to get creative in our recruiting efforts. We have made a more concerted effort to promote electrical energy professions by introducing young students to electrical sector careers while presenting electrical safety information in 54 elementary classrooms since January of 2022. During that same time, we've participated in an average of 5 career fairs at high schools for high school students to promote all career opportunities at the cooperative. We even partnered with our local NBC affiliate, KTTC News, to feature line workers in one of their monthly critical career segments. In addition to all of our outreach and education work, we fund about $30,000 worth of scholarships annually. We award $1,000 scholarships for general scholarships, and then $2,000 scholarships for any high school graduate who pursues a schooling in line work in a line worker program. The Workforce Development Scholarship Program was designed to encourage businesses and colleges to work together to create strong workforce pipelines that serve the needs of their community and supercharge student financial aid through laying on additional scholarships from local businesses. Cooperatives are among the most active organizations in their communities, operate in every corner of the state, and frequently utilize their philanthropic dollars for scholarships. For all these reasons and more, cooperatives are an ideal partner for fulfilling the promise of this program. The Workforce Development Scholarship would be one more arrow in our quiver to aim students toward a career in the electric energy sector. I hope you'll help our industry in this way. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much, Ms. Stevens, for your testimony. Are there any comments or questions from members? Senator Putnam, before the bill is laid over, would you like any final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this and for the vigorous discussion.
The bill is now laid over. And seeing that's the last item on the agenda, the committee is now adjourned.